Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Innovator Insights. It's the podcast where we talk about successful entrepreneurs and talk to them about their journey, going from the initial idea to final product and eventually having an impact on the world. And today we're super excited to have Devin Wilson here. He's the founder and CEO of RV SnapPads, in a company based in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Family run, bootstrapped, and successful in defining a new category in an old industry, and served hundreds of thousands of people to date. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Devin.
Thank you, Henrik. My pleasure. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. So before we talk business, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're at. I already gave that away, but you know, what do you do when you're not working? And you know, family, pets, stuff like that.
Pets, yeah. So I'm just in my early 40s now. We've been doing this business for about 10 years. I've got two small kids. My son's 5 and my daughter's 2. So that keeps me pretty busy, as you can imagine. And what I like to do, as you can probably tell by the golf flags behind me, is play golf in my spare time when I can find the time to do so. So
Devin has the Masters flag behind him. So you played at the Masters, or?
I wish. Yeah. Nope. Haven't played at the Masters. I didn't actually go. We had one of our employees here went, so I asked him to grab me a flag. But I've also got the PGA Championship from 2014 when Rory won, and there's the Ryder Cup from Bethpage, which I did go to this year. So yeah, that was pretty exciting.
As a Canadian, who do you root for in the Ryder Cup? You root for U.S. or Europe?
I probably shouldn't say, but to be honest.
I'm Swedish, born and raised, and you know, that stuff doesn't go out in my blood. So I'm rooting for Europe every time.
Yeah, so I mean, truthfully, being a Canadian, so am I. But, you know, our market is 95%
in the US. We can edit that out if you want to.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, congrats on that. I have a couple of kids myself. They're a little bit older, but it's the best thing in the world. So did you start your business straight out of school, or did you work for somebody else for a while?
I've had jobs from, you know, I started working when I was 14, and you know, I'm 40, I'll be turn 42 this year. So I've worked as from everything from a dishwasher to you know, in the warehouse to, I traveled to Australia for 6 months and worked in warehouses and, you know, picking fruits and do all kinds of stuff then when I was in my early 20s, just trying to find myself, all the way up to, you know, I've had other products that I've worked on. I went to business school, obviously got my BBA because I was interested. I knew when I was in Australia, all I was doing was thinking of new product concepts and thinking of how getting them to market, or taking products that were in Australia, and how could I bring them to Canada? You know, so I knew while I was away that I was very business minded. I was kind of trying to think of new ways and just fun items that I can bring into different markets. So it's just kind of where my mind's always been. We do also have an entrepreneurial family. You know, my cousin, my uncle, and my dad, very, you know, business minded. We always talk about products around the kitchen table and that type of thing. So it's kind of in my blood a little bit, but it also came to me fairly naturally. So yeah, I've kind of gone from all the way to the bottom to where I am right now, which I think has provided a lot of, you know, context, you know, and appreciation to, you know, working in the trenches, as you put it. I mean, I even worked as a materials tester in an engineering company. So I've, you know, literally even worked in the oil fields for a little bit. So kind of all over the place.
So you invented, I think it was a ergonomic bucket handle. Was that your first product?
Yeah, that was one of my first products. Yeah. And so that literally just came from when I was working as a material tester in an engineering company. So I literally had to carry buckets of all types of different heavy materials to test them. Over time, you know, I was finding that it was actually affecting well, truthfully, it was affecting my golf game. I wanted to do something about it.
Strain on your wrist.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. And you know, it goes into your neck and your back, and it's just the type of thing that most people wouldn't consider. But I found that once it was affecting my personal life, that I wanted to do something about it. And because, you know, generally I'm so business oriented or product oriented, I said, well, what can I do to solve this? So I was actually working on that product and trying to, you know, build that out. I worked on that for several years. My dad actually came to the table one day to talk about this particular product, which at the time I was pretty frustrated about because he was doing something totally different and we weren't really going in this direction at all. You know, we determined that we could actually bring a prototype of this product to market for very little amount of money to see if anybody, quite frankly, gave a damn. Because as you mentioned, it's a new product category. So we said, all right, well, let's give this a try. And it was so well received that, you know, within the first couple of years, both of us stopped doing the other things we were doing and focused full time on this product. And, you know, that was more than 10 years ago now.
Yeah. So for people who aren't familiar with the product, can you explain it?
Sure. The way we kind of equate it is shoes for RV. So in the same way your shoes on your feet provide grip, stability, and protection, we did the same thing for the leveling systems with RVs. Generally, we started at the big luxury Class A and fifth wheels worked our way down to, you know, travel trailers and all kinds of different. There's lots of different RV setups, RV leveling systems, stability systems. So there's a variety of different SKUs that we have now. But we just started with one and it was very well received. And then over time, more and more people asked and said, do you have something for our leveling system? We'd put them on a wait list. And then once that wait list hit like a critical mass, then we would spend the money to design a part and a tool and begin production. So we've actually built the product line almost exclusively that way. Just really listening to what the customers have to say. Obviously, with the exception of the first one where we just kind of took a swing and it's worked out.
Yeah, that's awesome. So basically, I looked at some of your customer testimonials, but when you park an RV, it could be on different surfaces, it could be on soil, it could be on concrete or
yeah, you
know, soft asphalt.
Sand, right? Ice, yeah, anything.
Yeah, yeah. And what most RVs come with, right, is just a metal plate that you,
right,
that you lower into the ground, which, you know, I could see being challenging. That maybe it doesn't stick, it slides, or it creates a big hole in the ground.
Right. And so that there's certain RV parks that, especially for the big Class A motorhomes, they have the asphalt that you're talking about. They require something underneath your leveling system, so you're not punching big holes in the asphalt. You can imagine that's expensive to fix and a problem for the parks. But beyond that, I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to have a metal part hitting the ground, be it gravel, grass, anything, right? You need larger surface area. And the solutions to date have been pieces of plastic, pieces of wood, things of that nature. So it's, you know, we hyper-focused on this very specific problem. It's obviously quite a niche problem. We didn't realize it was going to be as well received as it has been. And, you know, when I first started this, I was concerned that we would saturate, you know, this product category at some point. But as I started getting into it and realizing how big it actually is, now it doesn't have the TAM of, you know, other consumable items per se, but it's still massive. I mean, to date, we've still only penetrated around 2% of the North American market, you know, and we're not that big in Canada. And in the last few years, we've started to get into Germany and some of the countries around Germany. We have a rep there. So there's a lot of runway left for us.
Yeah, that's awesome. And RVs took a growth jump during the pandemic too, right?
Yeah, that was an interesting time for us because that could have been, I mean, we did grow significantly during that time. However, we had the same problems as everybody else. You know, our manufacturing facility would have to shut down for 2 or 3 weeks because COVID would go through the whole facility. Then even when it came back online, you'd only have a skeleton crew. You know, and by that point we had massive demand. So we had months worth of backlogs of POs that we had to figure out who's gonna get what parts when. You know, fortunately nobody canceled during that time, so we feel pretty good, but I would definitely say we left a significant amount of money on the table just with our inability to fulfill that unanticipated demand.
Yeah. Can you talk a little more about how the product is made?
Sure. Yeah, we actually make it out of recycled semi-truck tires. So to date, we're actually coming up on almost 6 million pounds of recycled rubber that we've helped keep out of landfills. So we're pretty proud about that. And realistically, they just take the tires, they process them in our main facility in Middlebury, Indiana. It's very close to Elkhart, which is essentially the center of the RV universe in the world. And they process the tires. We mix them with a particular type of urethane that's been made specifically for our what we used it for, and we put them in compression molds and that are heated up to a particular temperature, and we just run cycles. So it's not as automated as we would like it to be. Injection mold, you can run lights out with those types of machines, but ours is a lot more labor intensive, but it also makes sure that the part's made properly. So that's just kind of.
It's all made in the USA then?
It's all made in the USA, yeah.
All right, that's great. Yeah. And the tires come from the US too, or Canada?
The tires also come from the US as well. It's all sourced from the US. The only things that aren't is we have a part called stack pad, which is injection molded. And that is actually made locally. It's made in Canadian dollars. And we couldn't find it for anywhere close to the same price in the US. So that's why we did it here. And some of the boxes we use come from China, and that's just the price, but that's about it.
Awesome. Well, congrats on all the success. And like you said, niche, sometimes people use that in a negative term. I think it's actually fantastic. I think people chase big markets with an undifferentiated product, and it doesn't matter how big it is. If you can't find, the specific customers that you serve well. So yeah. I love niche markets. Tell me more about that first year. So you said you joined your dad. Did your dad have the original idea then or prototype, or how did they come about?
Yeah. So when, I don't know if you've seen them probably around, but there's the orange kind of, they look like big leveling blocks or Lego blocks that RVs have been using for over 30 years now. So he was one of the original inventors of that product.
Okay.
And, unfortunately, prior to him being able to benefit from that product, there was, some negative business interactions, I suppose, and him and the original inventors were diluted out of the company. So they were never able to actually take advantage of that product, and it's still doing very well today. So where the conversation came from is one of the other inventors who was his friend at the time happened to mention when the patent ran out on that. And so when we were talking about it around the table, he just happened to mention that and say, well, maybe we should revisit this, because there were a couple problems with that part when we made it back then. And now the RVs are bigger and heavier, and those problems are exacerbated. So that was actually the original reason why he brought it up. And then we went through a bunch of different styles of products. So originally we had magnets, and then we're using adhesives. Eventually we landed on the way it's attached now, which is just a mechanical attachment where you just put it underneath the leveling system, lower the leveling system into place, and it snaps into place. It's really simple. And we were a little bit nervous about it at first, but then we had it shake tested by a third party lab to make sure it could obviously stay on the leveling foot as you're driving. So we had it shake tested to over 50 Gs, so 50 times the force of gravity. And it didn't fall off at that point, but we just like to say, if you experience more than 50 Gs in your RV, you got bigger problems than where your snap pads are. So
yeah, that's awesome. It looks super simple. And so people put them on once and never have to take them off.
That's right. You just put them on, leave them on, forget about them. So, it's it solves a lot of the the leveling situations. It doesn't solve all of them, obviously. Sometimes you need to stack blocks underneath to reduce jack stroke, or you need more surface area because you're parked on, grass, and then it rains, say in Austin, and so we've got other solutions for that as well. But for the majority of the time, you can get away with just using your Snap Pads, and that was kind of the goal.
That's awesome. And then you said you guys started working it, and then you had immediate success that convinced you to sort of go all in. Can you talk a little more about that, how that evolved? How did you make that first product, and how did you get it to market?
Sure, the original, it took us months to find a actual contract manufacturer that could, well, that would, one, take a risk on us, because most manufacturers are busy. They, you know, a product that has no track record, especially that is trying to do something completely novel. Most people are not interested in even having that conversation. And then once we did find some of them, it was just cost prohibitive. So we had to find someone who was willing to work with us that could also do it, you know, for amount of money that we'd be able to, you know, they could make money and we could make money as well. So we did eventually find that manufacturer in South Bend, Indiana. And so we just had an idea for, we just picked the largest leveling system in the market. We don't work with that company, so I won't say their name, but if you have an RV, you'll probably know who they are. And yeah, we were able to, we just got a single tool. We were able to make some prototypes, and then we talked to different RV manufacturers have owners groups. So we talked to a Grand Design owners group and said, hey, we've got this new product. We'll provide it to you guys for free, or it was a heavy discount. I can't remember which one it was, probably both. And then just give us your feedback. Let us know what you think. And that initial feedback that came back, that was kind of what pushed us, because it was way better than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Everybody really appreciated the fact that it protected their feet, but also, you know, the rubber has other functionality that we weren't considering. For instance, it dampens vibrations. So when you're walking around your RV, it actually helps to stabilize your RV. Some of the big Class A's actually have, you know, laundry. They have washers and dryers. So when they're running that, we've actually got feedback that their RV isn't shaking as much when they have their Snap Pads on and the leveling system down. So there's, you know, there's unanticipated benefits to the product that we kind of got lucky with, but just ended up being there. So there was some design changes we had to make. Even from the first one, we had to put a bevel on the top so you can actually snap it into place and it didn't damage the lip. Over time, we realized we had to add drainage because we didn't realize it was going to snap in so tight that the water wouldn't leak out. So we had to add drainage and things like that. So we always just try to actually listen to the customer and not just think we know what they want. You know, we're truthfully, neither of us are RVers. We don't even really camp that much, to be honest with you. We just are avid entrepreneurs that are looking for, you know, unique ideas. So obviously we kind of just had to come up with something and get it out in the market. And then we've literally just gone along listening to customers' feedback. And
yeah, I know you talked about customer service in one of your recent posts, how, you know, a lot of companies just try to automate it away. And it's so frustrating. It's like I had a FedEx package I was sending, and for the life of me, I could not get hold of anyone, right? You get to talk to some AI agent and texting back and forth. And so that, and you waste 30, 40 minutes and get nowhere. And instead we can, tell me about your philosophy.
Well, it's, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm anti-AI. There's aspects of it that are just incredible. But even before AI, I mean, you know, we have chatbots that are just, that are just sending emails and things like that. It's like, well, I need an answer now. And, you know, so if you've already gone through a chatbot, you try to call someone, nobody picks up, or you get on some endless loop of, okay, well, you know, press 3, press 2. You know, we have it up in Canada. We have it with our banks. The banks are terrible. Same thing. You need to get on the phone with someone. It's even if you, when you do get on the phone with someone, it's like, oh, well, it's the wrong department. So we have all, every single person, I would guess in the world, if, or at least the Western world, has experienced that. So, you know, just having someone who, you know, can fluently speak English, who can listen, who actually has the knowledge. That's another big one, is you can actually get a human answering the phone, but if they don't know what they're talking about, it doesn't help that much. It's a little bit better. But if you have someone who is you know, as well versed as our customer service staff, because they've been doing it for years and years and years. It's massive. We get the feedback all the time. We had it just sent out a customer survey. It was one of our biggest pieces of feedback that people just appreciate that, you know, you call someone and some of them are just say, oh my God, a human, let alone someone who knows, oh, well, you have this particular RV, you want to take this into consideration and this will be the pack. Oh, and by the way, just because I like you, here's 10% off or whatever, right? I mean, we're just trying to make that, the experience is so terrible now, the bar is really low. So if you can just go, you know, take it one step further, it's just, you know, another, it's another boon to our brand and to our customer experience. And quite frankly, we all want that. I just wish more companies would do it, to be honest.
Yeah, man, I think it's almost like it's at a turning point now. AI is so prevalent everywhere that being human and having humans to talk to customers is actually a differentiator that I think is gonna, people are gonna start noticing much more.
For sure, I think AI fatigue is real, not only just in for that, but you know, even in marketing. Our marketing team, you know, we use AI very sparingly. We do use it, of course, it's still helpful and it's getting better all the time, but it also kind of just sends a signal of laziness if you're using it all the time for all your images and all your content. And the other thing is you cannot take AI's copy as gospel. It makes mistakes all the time and really stupid mistakes. So you have to be very careful when you're reading.
What drives me nuts is when it's used in a way, it's almost like deceptive. You get an email that says, hey, I saw you went to school in Sweden and, you know, I love Swedish meatballs. I was like, oh, that is
why
no real human would say that. No. So obviously rules based. And
right.
Anyway, you're definitely not going to respond to that email.
No, you're right. And you know that you're just on some email list. So it's even lazier. You have an email list. You just set up some AI auto send to 10,000. It's like, is anyone responding to this? Honestly? Yeah, this is crazy. This work.
Awesome. So is it still a family business?
Still a family business. Yeah. So both my brothers also work in the company. My mom is actually working warranty. She does a incredible job. My sister-in-law is head of customer service, as a matter of fact. She she works her ass off, quite frankly. We actually almost have to tell her to stop working because she'll be answering stuff at 11 o'clock on the weekends, because you just care, right? It's yeah. In our blood. We really care, and I think that comes through, you know. And now we're up to 22 employees and contractors as well. So it started with my dad and I, and there's a little bit of family in there. Don't get me wrong. You know, there's obviously additional considerations when working with family, which, you know, you need to, friends and family, of course. But, I think going forward, we probably won't bring any more family in, to be honest, but we actually do really work well together and we care a lot. And, so because that's true, we're able to make it work.
I don't know if you saw, the show Landman.
I just started watching that actually. Yeah.
There's an episode where Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, makes a, you know, cameo. And I'm no big Jerry Jones fan, even though I'm a Cowboy fan. But it's a really cool episode where he talks about the very reason he started the Cowboys was that he could work with his family.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you haven't seen, well, obviously you haven't seen the episode yet, but I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Because he talked about that, right? You know, most families end up only seeing your daughters, your, you know, uncles, on Christmas and Thanksgiving, maybe, you know, and
yeah,
I don't want that. I don't want to live like that. So he invented, you know, a business where he could work with his kids and see them almost every day.
Well, I could tell you, that is exactly how my dad would feel about it too. He's coming up on, it's only a couple of years away from 80, I think. And he says almost daily, just remember, I'm not retiring. I'm never retiring. I want to come in. Like, he loves this. He, you know, he says it gets his juices flowing because he gets to come in here, gets to see what's going on. You know, he's his role in the company now is less operational, but more kind of a mentor. And he's really good for, you know, the culture of the business. He's kind of the elder statesman. Depending on the meetings that we have to go to, it makes sense to have him included. And it's obviously really fun to be able to work with them. And like you said, you know, we get to spend a lot of time together. We get to win together, we get to learn together. So, you know, we definitely feel the same way, and we definitely feel very lucky that's the case. So,
yeah. And I'm sure, I think that's one of the things that keeps you young too, as you get older. I think people that just retire and watch TV, that you age much faster versus if you're engaged actually in intellectual activity.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll appreciate me saying this, but he actually mentioned that, you know, he almost doesn't, there's only a few of his friends now that he can really talk to that much, because almost all of his friends are now retired, right? Where that's a day of either golfing all the time or tending to the garden or watching Netflix day after day after day after day after day.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's fine. I mean, if you've been, there's nothing wrong with that. But I would agree with you. And just in the same way that if you don't work out, your muscles deteriorate. I think that's the same for your mind. If you're not exercising your mind in different ways, and, you know, if you're part of a growing business that, you know, I mean, you know, there's challenges, there's considerations, there's new product launches. Mm-hmm. In the same day, you can have, you know, the best sale you've ever had, and then someone try to sue you. It's like, holy crap, this is quite a day. Right. So, but that's just the nature of being an entrepreneur. And if you're able to withstand, you know, those very stressful times where you're losing sleep and figuring out what you're going to do, you know, you get to, if you have something that's winning, then you get to enjoy those wins the same way that you need to, you know, learn and kind of grow from, I wouldn't say the losses, but the challenges, because there's a lot.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Has there been one moment in the history of the company where you guys thought, this is it, we're not going to make it?
I wouldn't say one. I think an ongoing issue for us has always been supply chain. Just because it's always such an unknown. When we launch a product, we don't know what's going to happen. And we're probably on our sixth or seventh contract manufacturer, right? And every time you move, it's a big issue. You know, in COVID, we lost a decent amount of revenue because we didn't have enough parts, and then we overcorrected by having too many tools and too much manufacturing, and then we had to pull back. And and then some of our manufacturers, you know, we found out after the fact, were not great businessmen, so they were underwater. So you kind of have to pivot and then go to another. So that logistics and supply chain has kind of been holding us back for quite a while. Fortunately, last year we really dug in, found two of our best. We have a primary and secondary manufacturer now, and they are by far our best partners we've ever worked with. They're both very excellent, excellently run facilities. And, you know, for the first time, I think, in the company's history, we're really solid in our supply chain and logistics this year. There's still a lot of refinement to go, but, you know, I think we can finally put our foot back on the gas and be confident that, you know, we're not going to get crushed by our own growth, which I think is people have to be careful about. It's not always just full throttle all the time. You can bury yourself in, you know, too much inventory, or over-promising and under-delivering with very large customers. You know, we're now considering getting into Walmart, you know, and all the big box retailers. But we wanted to make sure before we do that, we have to tread lightly with those. And for the first time, I think we're finally there. So that's pretty exciting.
That's awesome. Yeah, you just hope that we'll have a period of stability, because, like you said, I think every product company went through the same in the pandemic. Demand just increased, and then we ordered too much, and then you would start with inventory, and then the whole supply chain gets uncertain if they're going to survive or not. And then, you know, as that starts stabilizing, it's the tariffs. And so hopefully we can come to a point where it's hard enough to run a business without the world trying to mess with you while you do it.
You're exactly right. Stability is the name of the game for us this year as well. I've had a couple people come to us and say, well, we should do this, or we should have our own manufacturing facility. It's like, okay, just wait. We're not going to vertically integrate right now. Let's get a solid 18 plus months under our belt of, you know, letting the sales team do their thing, letting marketing do their thing. We've got lots of new products on the go coming up here. We're now, I wouldn't say pivoting, but focusing on accessories, because previously our core products are more or less one and done. You know, you install them, they last forever. We have customers that install them in the first year and still have them on 10 years later. So now we're moving to accessories, so we can, you know, build out bundling, we can increase our average order value, and really have a lot more offerings for customers who like the SnapPad brand and just want more products. So, you know, that's kind of what we're focusing on now to pull more growth levers.
Yeah, I mean, that's just tremendous value. If you buy it once and you can use it for 10 years, it's, I'm sure you've earned their trust at that point, you know.
Yeah. You know what's wild? There's some RV owners that they'll get a new RV or trade their RV in every year or two. The most I've heard is a customer is on their seventh set of SnapPads, because we ask them not, well, our warranty is such that if you uninstall them, it voids the warranty, just because we don't know how people are uninstalling them and how they're reinstalling them. If you damage the lip, obviously, then you've compromised the structural integrity of the part. So we obviously, it's hanging off the bottom of your RV while you're traveling, so it needs to be, you know, it needs to be not compromised. That being said, I mean, realistically, they're strong enough that if you do it delicately, you could easily uninstall them and reinstall them. But, you know, we also have to draw the line somewhere, especially for liability reasons.
That makes sense. Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're kind of coming to the end of our time, but to wrap up, two questions for you. One, what are you most excited about here in 2026, the next 12 months? Are there any new initiatives coming out? And then finally, any final advice to aspiring entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs early in their journey?
Absolutely. So first question, we've got some of the new products that are coming out in the next few months here. Some for tongue jacks on travel trailers and utility trailers. Kind of new innovation where the pad actually articulates. So if you're parking on a sloped driveway or uneven terrain, your pad will actually articulate to accommodate that. And we've got some new products coming out for truck campers, which is a much smaller segment of the market, but I do believe we can take a pretty big chunk of that market because this style of product doesn't exist there. Designing new products and coming out with new products is kind of my passion. I really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. So that's generally what I focus on. And any new entrepreneur, just you have to keep going. The only direction is forward. I mean, within reason, there are times when you just need to pull the ripcord and get out of there and go focus on something else.
Yeah.
But it's just the hard times will come. They'll come frequently. But if you can push through it, if you can have a good partner that supports you through those tough times, you know, the world can be your oyster. I know that I've personally been in situations where I've looked in the mirror and be like, do I really want to keep doing this? This is pretty rough. Yeah. But if you can find a way to get through those points, if you can lean on your business coach, if you can lean on other entrepreneurs, ask questions, you know, take time off, reset, do whatever you can to find a way to push through. And, you know, you just never know what'll happen.
Yeah, that's great advice. You mentioned business coach there. I saw you part of a network group.
Yeah.
Is that something you find helpful through your career?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if we can mention their name or not. I should be able to. Yeah, but I'm part of Hampton, which is a business owner group. And we meet once a month for 2.5 hours. And everybody kind of, everybody just kind of says what is the most important thing they're dealing with right now and how can the rest of these owners help me, either through, you know, emotional support or actual contacts or, you know, just letting people know their experience. I do find that very helpful. I have a separate business coach as well that essentially he's had a few exits. He manufactures physical products as well. So he's where I want to be. So it's nice to be able to, you know, talk to him about a number of those things, but I don't stop there. Obviously I have my dad who's an entrepreneur. You know, I've also got my father-in-law who is a business owner. So I try to do my best to ask. I mean, if I had any questions, I might contact you. I ask whoever I think would have, you know, some positive feedback, not even positive feedback. Sometimes it needs to just be real feedback. You know, and take all that different information and then make a decision from there. So the one thing I know is that I don't know a lot of things, so I'm not scared to ask questions. I always want to ask questions.
I think that's a great quality. Through my career, I've got a lot of value out of peer groups too, because there are certain things that you can't talk to your employees about. Maybe you can't talk to your board. Maybe you don't want to talk to your wife about it. To have a set of folks that are going through the same challenges is just super valuable.
Absolutely. And,
just for emotional, psychological health, to have someone to talk to is important. It's easy to isolate yourself as a CEO and feel that you're in a lonely place, but you don't have to be. So I recommend anybody that's listening to follow your advice there. I think it's a great thing to do.
100% agree. Yep.
All right, Devin. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been a lot of fun learning about your journey, and thanks for all the great insights that you've shared. Best of luck in the year ahead, and thanks again.
Thank you, Henrik. Yep, you too.
All righty. This is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur, or you work in a company that creates new products, and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show, and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your post and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content to make sure you don't miss any episodes. Please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.